Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Direct Line trading update call. My name is Adam, and I'll be the operator for the call today. If you would like to ask a question during the question and answer session of this call, you may do so by pressing star followed by one on your telephone keypad. I now have the pleasure of handing the call over to Penny James. Penny, if you'd like to go ahead, please.
Thanks, Adam. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to our Q3 trading update. Now, we don't normally do a call at Q3 as the reporting's very light, but we are conscious there have been quite a few questions in recent weeks around external factors, so we thought it was a really great opportunity for a Q&A session. Before I start, though, a quick apology. Sadly, Tim isn't able to join us today, as a family member's unwell, and it's much more important that he's with them at the moment. So we send him and his family our love and best wishes. We do have Neil Manser here, who you all know well, and is Chief Strategy Officer and leads change across the organization. In the event I run out of answers, you want to ask him anything, or my tech drops. Now, you'll be delighted that I don't have a long speech, but I will give just a few thoughts on the quarter while you gather up your questions. So firstly, why don't we turn to trading? Now, overall, Q3 saw shopping levels increase across the portfolio, following the easing of the lockdown restrictions. And our strong competitiveness has helped drive growth across a number of brands and channels. Own brand policy count grew compared to Q3 2019, and gross written premiums were stable, which is a really good result compared to the 3% reduction in premiums that we saw in Q2. In motor, own brand policy count held flat as we saw some recovery in new business shopping and retention normalized following the increase in Q2. We also saw a continuation in the risk mix impact on average premium that we highlighted at Q2, with fewer new cars, new drivers, or midterm amendments as people add drivers or change cars. But as well as this, we've seen a modest market premium deflation, leading to a slight reduction in own brand gross premiums overall. Looking at claims, motor damage severity is running a little higher than the long-term average as the repair industry responds to COVID-19 related factors such as slightly longer repair times, supply chain glitches, increased cleaning costs, that kind of thing. But this was more than offset by claims frequency remaining below pre-lockdown levels. In home, we grew direct own brand policy count and premiums, demonstrating our improved competitiveness, in particular in the PCW channel. In Green Flag, we've had a really strong quarter, delivering 9.6% premium growth as Green Flag continues to demonstrate its competitiveness. And this has helped offset a reduction across other personal lines. Commercial has delivered an incredibly impressive result across all channels. Direct premiums grew by 12.4% in Q3, whilst NIG also grew premiums by 8.7%. The business was also recognised at the National Insurance Awards as Direct Line won Commercial Lines Insurer of the Year, and Churchill was awarded Growth Company of the Year. Now, despite further lockdown restrictions, we've made no changes to our estimates on COVID-related claims in travel or commercial, which remain at 25 million and 10 million respectively. Now, there were two other areas that I wanted to say a few words on before we went to Q&A. First, the long-awaited FCA report into pricing practices. Now, I've said before that we're supporters of the FCA reviewing this area. I think it's fair to say the pricing practices report did go further than we were expecting and represents a substantial change to the way the entire market operates. That said, it is something we've been preparing for some time, and you'll recall Kate speaking to you about it last year at the Capital Markets Day. We and other players are working with the FCA on the practicalities of how their intent is translated into market practice. And so it remains too early to say what the financial impact is. But I've been clear and I remain confident that on a level playing field, our portfolio of market-leading brands underpinned by exceptional customer service and indemnity controls operating across multiple channels will enable us to thrive. The second thing I wanted to comment on was our progress on the transformation agenda. In terms of the transformation agenda, I really want to say how proud I am of the way our people have continued to respond to the pandemic. Not only have people adapted to home working without compromising on customer service, but they've continued to drive our transformation forward. I talked at half year about the progress that we've made since lockdown started, replacing our accounting ledgers and claims payment systems, replacing the green flag claim system, and upgrading the telephony throughout the organization. Well, in Q3, that progress has continued. We've launched a new mileage money-back proposition for our direct line motor customers, which offers a more flexible approach to managing mileage on their policy. We've passed another milestone in our technology transformation with the migration of our technology to a new mainframe platform. And we also continue to make progress with our new motor platform and are on track to start writing direct line and Churchill policies on it this year. As I've said before, organizational change is just as important as technology change. And in Q3, our trading and change teams have moved to a new agile operating model. Changing the way we work to take advantage of our technology is a crucial part of our strategy to offer customers better value and choice by unlocking our ability to be more innovative and enabling us to move faster to market with our products. So while some timings were rephased in the early part of lockdown, our transformation continues at pace. So overall, we've delivered an encouraging trading performance while making good progress on our strategic transformation. So what does that all mean in terms of our outlook then? Well, we're on track to deliver our combined ratio target this year and actually expect to come in slightly below the 93%. Our ambition to deliver a 20% expense ratio in 2023 remains, and we reiterate that. And we recognize that there are some uncertainties remaining in the relation to COVID, in relation to Brexit transitions, and in relation to where we are in the process with the pricing practices review. But based on the things we can see so far, we're reiterating our 93 to 95% guidance for the medium term. So I'll leave my comments there. Thank you for listening, and I'll hand back to Adam to coordinate the questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, it was star followed by one on your telephone keypad. When preparing to ask your question, please ensure that your line is unmuted locally. And if you do change your mind of your question at any time, it is star followed by two. Okay, it looks like we have our first question. This one comes from Freya Kong of Bank of America. If you'd like to go ahead with your question, please, Freya.
Hi, Freya.
Good morning. Hi, Penny. Good morning. I have two questions, please. Firstly, on the SCA, you've not provided that much comment today pending the consultation. What are the biggest issues or practicalities you expect to be addressed during this consultation, and what sort of industry pushback are you expecting? Secondly, on motor, could you please give us a sense of what frequency benefits you saw in Q3 versus Q2, and I guess the outlook for Q4 and next year and the path to normalization? Thanks.
Thanks, Freya. Okay, let's do FCA first, shall we? Look, if I stand back, I've said that I think we can thrive on any level playing field, and the keeper system makes sure that field is clear. It's not both level, but most importantly, that everybody understands it the same way. I think what it's done is kind of very material in as much as it kind of affects pretty much every policyholder's price across the market, and so is a major intervention in practical terms and a way, and logistically in the way that the market operates. If I kind of go, when we pause for a second first on their intent, and then I'll go to sort of some of your specific questions. it's pretty clear what their intent is. Their intent is to get fair value for customers, which is something that we and I'm sure other players in the market have been thinking hard about for some time. It's to have new business prices that are greater or equal to, if you like, renewal prices for customers within equivalent segments. So they recognize there can be differences between brands, channels, products, and so on and so forth. They're not trying to shrink margins in the industry, importantly. They've made that very clear that they actually think the margins in the industry overall are fine. But they are flagging they want to see reduction in unnecessary churn, as they might put it. And therefore, they may seek to see less shopping, less marketing, less commission costs. So I think the intention of what they're trying to do is really clear. I think there are lots of uncertainties as to how that operates in reality, and that's where I think all the energy is going at the moment. You asked, do I think there'll be a mass industry pushback? I'd be really surprised to see the industry en masse pushback. We've said, and the ABI has said, that we will support the FCA in this process, that actually most of the CEOs I deal with would like to see some of that pricing, the price walking concept reduce, and it's very difficult for individual players to do that. So I think you will see, on the whole, the industry support that, but push hard to make sure that it's right first time, that it can be implemented sensibly, that people have got time to get it right, and that people understand it in the same way. And if I just put a little bit of colour around the kinds of things, there are lots and lots of areas where I think we need greater clarity. And credit to the FCA, they have a series of webinars and conversations with industry happening over the coming weeks that will work through which of those points are things that they've thought through and know the answer to, and which of those points where they need to work with the industry on what the right answer is. And I'm sure there'll be some of both. Kinds of things that are unclear that make a real difference in the real world are, it's clear that you can't have new business prices above renewal prices, but, for example, can I offer a cash back? Can I offer, 12 months for the price of 10? Can I offer a soft toy? I know I can offer a rescue product or a different kind of product add-on as long as I can include it in pricing the same way, but does that mean I have a different pricing structure for direct things that I sell direct to things I sell next to an insurance product? Can a price comparison site offer all those things, because they're not directly covered by that, and then cross-trade it back to a commission, et cetera, et cetera? How does it apply to brokers? So there are lots of areas where to make sure that their intent lands safely within the industry, we need to be really clear and consistently clear so that we don't end up in a position where one insurer does it one way, one insurer views it another way, and the market is chaotic. And the other reason that's important is because I'm relatively relaxed about what version of those answers we get, as long as we're clear what those answers are. But I can't finalize my trading strategy through it until I know what those answers are, which is why I think it's too early in those conversations to be putting numbers on the table at this point. So really important that we get clarity, and I suspect by the time everyone's pulled their questions, there'll be quite a lot on that list. But I don't think they're things that are insurmountable. I think it's more about making sure that the lines are drawn appropriately, clearly, so that when we implement this as an industry, we implement it once, and everybody's understood it consistently. So if I follow their intent, what I think they're trying to do, what they say they're trying to do, that is a market that we can thrive in. Brands, service quality, multi-channels, claims advantages, and the strategic steps that we've been taking are all things that put us in the right space to operate really effectively in that market. I'm just really focused on making sure that what we get is a sensible transition into that world, and that's the conversation that we'll carry on with the FCA through the ABI, other CEOs and so on, to make sure we get to that point.
Does that deal with the FCA question, Freya?
Yes, thank you. That's very
okay.
helpful.
Then if I go on to frequency and outlook and so on and so forth, what are we seeing in frequency in the market? I think, well, we saw, the broad answer is the shape will follow driving patterns, which are kind of publicly available. But, you know, we were obviously very materially down in Q2. We've seen that restore in Q3. But it's still, if you look at the October data, you know, I think October driving levels are something like between 10 and 15% below what they were pre-COVID. And you're seeing generally a frequency lag, claims frequency lag on that as well. So, and there's lots of debate about what's, you know, driving that differential. But broadly, we're seeing a slightly different mix of kind of accidents happening, and I think you're seeing kind of less commuter bump into the back of the car in front type accidents, and that's probably the thing that's most driving any mixed differentials. So still lagging behind those overall driving levels, and obviously as you come into the winter, people will be taking views on what you know, what is now looking like a sort of a choppier winter. From a pandemic perspective for all of us, people taking different views on what that means for their pricing. I mean, if I touch on severity first while we're doing frequency, severity, we've seen accidental damage, so age damage severity is running slightly ahead, a little ahead of our normal expectation levels. I think two things really driving that. Mainly, that is what I would call COVID-related factors through the recovery, the repair industry. So supply chain glitches, taking slightly longer to repair vehicles, cleaning costs, those kind of things. So what I would call non-structural but COVID-related type effects. There's a bit of mix, which is really, as I say, I think slightly different kinds of accidents happening in there as well, which again you'd say is not long-term, not necessarily certainly long-term structural. And then as you look forward, the only thing I'd say that people are alert to that could be structural is how any Brexit transition lands and what the implications on cross-border kind of activity is there, so that has the possibility of putting inflation in depending on where that lands. So that's kind of the severity picture, and then if I kind of put it all together into pricing, how are we thinking about pricing? And we always are trying to look forward at what pricing, you know, what claims trends are for the next 12 months for the life of the policy and reflect that as our pricing base. Usually what we do is use long-term inflation as our guide for that. It's very clear as you run through these kind of circumstances that you need to use some judgment on top of that as well, because whereas perhaps as we came out of Q2, it was reasonable to assess that things would right relatively quickly. I think as we've moved through Q3, all of us have become clear that the winter is not, you know, it's going to be tougher and there are going to be more restrictions and so on than we would have hoped. And therefore, you know, subjudgment around those long-term inflation assumptions is kind of natural. And I think when you look at what's happening in the market, there's a couple of data points out there around, I think, confused that come out and so on, that suggest the market is come off a little bit, probably a couple of points, I think, in those data studies. I think that's quite natural and rational if you look at what's happening pandemic-wide and you look at some of the claims frequency effects that we're seeing at the moment, then that feels like a pretty modest and rational response to that set of circumstances.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Freya. Adam, back to you.
Thank you. We have our next question. This question comes from John Denham of Morgan Stanley. If you'd like to go ahead with your question, please, John.
Brilliant. Good morning, Penny. Morning, Neil. Firstly, I was just wondering how you think your comparative advantage changes in a flat pricing environment. You mentioned the importance of brand in your intro. And then secondly, you're guiding to a combined ratio better than target this year. You've already taken various actions to support customers, and it feels like you've already been fairly cautious in recognising frequency benefits. So given that you said you don't want to make excess profits after the crisis, I was just wondering if you expect to announce additional additional measures for customers if frequency drops in 4Q, maybe something which requires less action on the customer's behalf, i.e. rebates instead of changing mileage, or maybe passing future benefits through via pricing instead. Thanks.
Thanks, John. Why don't we take the second one first, because it sort of rolls on from the last question, and then I'll come on to the long-term one, a comparative advantage question. Yes, we do think core better than target, as I've flagged, by the end of the year. Actually, we've done, a lot of things for customers. You're right, we said from the outset we didn't want to make excessive profits as a result of COVID. I don't think we're doing that. When you look at the operating profit in the round, you look at both the 90-odd million of force for good type initiatives, as we call them, where we've either given back to people or customers or communities through this program or through this period. And when you look at what's happening on investment income and so on and so forth, there are lots of things happening in the P&L. And I think when we look in the round, we don't think we're leaving this year, even with the core slightly outside the original guidance targets, with what I would describe as excessive profits. How are we thinking about customers in that context at the moment? Well, as you know, we made kind of mileage adjustments available to all earlier in the year. We've been in contact with all of our customers to offer that, and many hundreds of thousands have taken that up. That remains open to people. And then, obviously, we just touched on the new proposition for Direct Line customers, which is really a permanent and ongoing approach to giving mileage flexibility to customers as a step. You know, it was something we've been thinking about anyway in terms of giving greater flexibility. What you can do in the direct space is seek to personalize product much more, and that's where we see it going over time, whereas price comparison is, really largely homogeneous products with, but competitive pricing. We think in the direct space that with great digitization, you can improve and tighten personalization for customers, make it dead easy to use and make it a much better fit for them. And in a way, the mileage proposition that we've just put out there is kind of a first step into that space for us. So we're quite excited about that, and the feedback from customers is great so far, and we've already had a couple of hundred thousand people take us up on it in the first week or two. So those are kind of the way we are thinking about that. And as you say, whereas in the original lockdown, we were kind of all in, quite a different space, a very different kind of lockdown and position we're in at the moment. We're now in the process of looking forward and trying to assess overall what those, implications are, frequency implications are, and start, reflecting those as our, as we would do normally in our trends when we're pricing. So I think we're giving back in lots of different ways, if you like, overall. And I think in a round, it's not excessive. We don't view this as excessive profit. So hopefully that deals with the second question. In terms of the comparative advantage point, I think if you move, if you throw yourself into a world where there's less shopping around potentially, and less drive for customers to investigate other products because of price alone, which is where I think you should expect us to sort of start moving towards, then having powerful brands and brilliant service become a more important differentiator Now, you still have to be really sharp on costs, so you can't carry cost disadvantages. So the strategy that we have in place to address the cost base increased, you know, through increased digitization and automation underpinned by the technology changes, that's all really, really important as well. But actually, having those different brands, you know, having great brands and great service and back office claims advantage and so on, those things still really matter in that world, and probably even more. So we see those as real comparative advantages. I think the other thing is that with or without kind of any change in the marketplace, we had always envisaged, as I said, over time, that direct lets you operate a more tailored product over time for people. That it can, you can demonstrate greater value for people, but you can also make product more tailored. So you'll see a lot of our growth in the home space at the moment is content driven. We bought Broly in the summer because they've got a great vision and some tech around what you can do with much more tailored products for rent, the renters market, for instance. And I think you can do that in a digital world much more straightforwardly than you could do without the overhead. You know, it would in the old world, it would have come with a lot of overhead, but I don't think increasingly it will. But the direct distribution gives you a real advantage in that space. So we see having multiple channels kind of as really important in the direction of travel. And it also lets us segment our book in a different way. So as things move forward, if we, you know, if we're comfortable with the pricing for a particular cohort and we're comfortable with those margins, we can take new business in a different way through, you know, different brand or different product or different proposition by having a variety of options. It gives us choices and it gives us levers. And I guess what I'm saying at the moment is I don't yet know exactly how I want to use all those levers because that rather depends on what the exact way the market operates. Which is what the next few months are about. But I'm confident we've got choices, and choices that some others don't have.
Very clear. Thanks, Penny.
Thanks, John. Adam.
Fantastic. We have our next question, Penny. It comes from James Shuck of Citi. If you'd like to go ahead with your question, please, James.
Hi, James.
Hi, good morning. Hi, Penny. Hi, Neil. So a couple of things from me. Just the comment about the rollout of the most platforms in Direct Line and Churchill, you're taking a more measured approach. It's been quite measured for quite some time. It sounds like it's getting delayed again. Could you just elaborate a little bit about what's happening there, please? And then secondly, on the so the guidance for kind of better than 93 in 2020, obviously there's COVID impacts in there which include frequency. Could you just elaborate, is that a normal run rate when you look through frequency and the COVID losses? So are you delivering slightly better than the target range currently? Those are my two questions. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you. So let's do the what's going on with the transformation space and kind of, I guess, the expenses space tool. I'm actually, if I look across the year, James, I'm just really pleased with the thing that surprised me most, and I think I said this at Q2, is how fast we got back onto the transformation agenda. And if you'd asked me coming into lockdown whether it would be possible to move to an agile operating model, deliver multiple systems into a full home working environment, I'd have just looked at you as if you were mad. But actually, that's what we've done. So I'm super happy with the progress we've made on transformation. Where have we had delays? Some drops, some areas, finance systems have no delays at all. We have delayed a little on the motor drop, you know, a few months because we lost developer productivity in India in the heart of the lockdown as the main reason that's got deferred. But we're still hitting the target that we set ourselves, which was the end of this year. So we're pretty much in, the territory we expected to be in. What's the measured rollout? I think there's a reality check here. We're trying to roll out a system into a pandemic, across 3,000 people that looks after the vast majority of our customers. You wouldn't expect me to compromise customer service for the sake of pace. And we had hoped to be able, much as we've been rolling systems out, we had hoped to be able to deliver this with in the early weeks with people in offices and roll it through that way. We can't do that. We're delivering it in homes. Actually, training is going really well. But the pace at which we roll that out will reflect really how severe restrictions and lockdowns are. So productivity, great with home working. It's high 90%, so right up there. It drops significantly if the schools are out, for instance. And really all we're saying is we'll roll out at the pace that is right as we start to train this out and deliver it into our customer base and our people. So not concerned about technology. In fact, we are, you know, technically live on DL and Churchill at the moment and going through the kind of fine-tuning processes that you go through before you actually start putting customers on it. So not worried about that, just recognizing the realities of getting the balance between customer and cost delivery, for want of a better description, right, in a pandemic. Does that deal with your question on the technology side?
Yeah, I think so. Very understandable. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks. And the other one I didn't write down, which is hopeless. So, Rami James, there was a second question. Maybe there wasn't. I should have written it down.
Is there a net COVID benefit from that, or are you actually running at that level?
Sorry. Thank you. Thank you very much. Sorry, memory like this. Are we running? I think the way I would view, I mean, clearly COVID is sort of intrinsic in lots of the numbers at the moment. So trying to draw a net COVID view is slightly challenging at times. But I think what I'd say overall is, you know, we had hoped to be able to improve our current year loss ratios and so on over the course of this year. That's part of the plan. And we feel as though we've done that on an underlying basis, if such a thing were allowed to be reported, as well as on a post-COVID basis. I'm not sure that I would turn that into a projection that says we're going to long-term beat 93 to 95. That's not what we're saying. But I think we're comfortable with the progress that we're making in real terms, if you like, underneath, not just the COVID effects that are coming through.
And if I may just quickly, when it comes to 2020 loss picks, are you baking in a bit more conservatism based on the potential for a rebound in frequency and severity, you know, in this year and perhaps into next year? Could you just elaborate a little bit about how you're setting the loss picks in relation to that 93?
Well, I think it's fair to say we haven't set our year-end reserves yet, and there are some rules of the game, so you can't anticipate, you know, claims frequencies that haven't happened in the future and so on and so forth. What you would expect us to do is to take full account of the risks that sit around the current, the claims that have incurred at that point, if you like. And there are risks in some of those spaces, in particular around inflation effects as some of those claims close out and so on and so forth. So you should expect us to take the same pretty prudent approach to reserving that we always take. Put it like, you know, I think as we get to year end, probably the message.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks, James. Adam, anyone else on the line?
Yes, we have another question. This question comes from Greg Patterson of KBW. Greg, if you would like to go ahead with your question, please.
Morning,
Greg. Everybody. How's it? Good. Switching to home, I did note RSA made a statement about that its Moran brand had grown strongly and they wanted to push further for share there. So just wondering if I could switch the discussion a bit to home. And I'm looking for some numbers here. I was wondering what your underlying claims inflation is there currently in terms of the range, 3 to 5, is it below, above, etc. And I wonder if you could talk a bit about what you've achieved year on year in rate and year on year in mix there, please. Thank you.
I'll give you a feel, Greg. Obviously, we haven't published all of those numbers at Q3, but what's the essence of what's going on in home? I think, you know, look, home is a super competitive market and has been for some time. You know, it's not no change there, more with or without more than or whatever their comments are. But what we've seen, I think we've had a good year. We entered the year, and you'll have heard us talk about this kind of before. At the back end of last year, we booked a positive with escape of water kind of actually moving into low, if not negative, claims inflation territory. The number of the actions we put in place there kind of started to rise. And the thing that we did that had the most fundamental difference is kind of bring all our what we would call our manufacturing units, sort of bring claims and underwriting and trading people together to really understand the picture and then use a combination of levers to tighten up some pricing, some terms and conditions, some, you know, selection, if you like. And the net result of all of that is we were seeing improvements in claims inflation as we came into the year. And as a result of that, on an ongoing basis, and we were able to therefore reassess price a little in the market and started to grow considerably. And in particular, where we've been, I think, not so strong in price comparison, what you've seen over the last 18 months or so is that price comparison channel on home has seen some pretty strong growth, and you've seen that continue in Q3. So underlying, we were coming in with claims inflation, I don't know, lower end of that range sort of thing overall, something like that. It's hard to say exactly how that got distorted in Q2 by COVID. And although claims frequency did not drop at the same level as motor did, it dropped very materially. It's pretty much back in shape now, slight mixed differences, but pretty much back in shape. But we're still seeing it at a pretty controlled level as we were in the first quarter. So pretty comfortable there. You're seeing, broadly IFP growth and premium growth, therefore, driven primarily by the PCW channel. So what we've kind of seen as we've come through Q3, and this is not just true of home, is that the price comparison channel came back on faster than the direct channel. And I think there are a few reasons for that, but some of them are that we had deployed a lot of people out of the operations areas into travel to support it. And so some of our marketing activities didn't come back on until the back end of Q3, the early part of Q4. So I suspect some of it is, idiosyncratic to us. But nonetheless, we saw PCW come back faster. So I think overall, claims inflation has been running was running at the lower end of that, and probably when the distortions run out, there's any reason to believe that shifted significantly. And we're able to take the margins we're comfortable with and grow in that marketplace at the moment. So we're really pleased with how home's doing.
Penny, so I assume if you're saying you've been pricing in line with your claims inflation numbers, and there's been a negative mix from because of more PCW new business.
So what you're seeing in the mix terms is that average premium, where you see that is an average premium. So because the average premiums on PCW are lower than in the direct space. So that's where it comes through. But what you'll see in the Q3 numbers relative to Q3 19 is that we've grown both IFPs and premiums, notwithstanding that average premium drop, which gives you a sense of the kind of levels of growth that are going through.
Right.
Hope that helps.
I've absorbed it all. I'm sure I'll send you another question via email. Thank you.
I shall look forward to it, or Paul will at least. Thanks, Greg. Sorry? Okay.
Adam, have you got anyone else on the line?
Yes, excuse me. Yes, of course, we have some more questions on the line. This question comes from Yudhish Chachuri of Autonomous Research. If you'd like to go ahead with your question, please.
Good morning, everyone. I've got two questions. The first one is regarding your comments on the FCA review. You talked about the logistical challenge in terms of implementation and the need for sensible transition period. So I was wondering whether you can share what that sensible transition period is. That's my first question. And then secondly, just a point of clarification on motor pricing. You are still pricing in line with inflation. And you mentioned that in the market, what you're seeing is decreases of a couple of points, which you believe was actually a rational response, so not necessarily an increase in competition. Is that correct?
So pricing. What I'm saying is that what we and I presume other people will try and do is try and always understand what the claims impact on is going to be on a 12-month policy, and so as the base position, if you like. So people have to take more of a view in an environment that is as uncertain as this than they do in a normal year, I guess is the first thing. I think the decrease a couple of points coming out of the market, therefore, what does that mean? I think that means really that, or my interpretation of that is therefore that some people are reducing prices to reflect, for whatever reason, in that space. So is that, that is more competition, if you like, but really it's, I think, likely to be the fact that people are looking at their margins, looking forward and taking a different view on what their claims expectation on those margins are. I don't know if that answers the question. I think it does.
Thank you.
Brilliant. FCA, logistical, what are the challenges? I think the two things is that there's some risk. It's a market-wide risks, if you like, and then some practical challenges. So market-wide risks. I think it, and the FCA will appreciate this, and they want to land first time. There is a risk if two players, whether significant or not, interpret rules in a different way that means they think they can trade under a different set of rules in a marketplace. So there is a logistical, there's a risk there that A, you get customer outcomes that are wrong, B, you get some weird effects in trading, and C, that you have to then change the rules again to get it clear. So that's the kind of transition effect that we are keen to avoid, which is why I said the most important thing is getting clear what we actually all mean. So I think that's sort of base one in terms of transitions. Then there are some logistical challenges. So what are those kinds of things? Well, everyone will have to do some kind of, bearing in mind this impacts basically the prices of everybody in the market, every kind of policyholder to some degree, then there is clearly a substantial piece of work for everyone in the market to do to kind of rebuild or tailor or, adjust accordingly their pricing model. So that's the first thing. There's likely to be customer communications that go alongside that as well, and any customer communication that affects underlying systems takes energy in it. Just by way of example, the last year renewal disclosure, last year's sort of renewal price disclosure, I think the market had 8 months to implement that, because it required going into the underlying systems and changing changing customer communications and so on. And then off the top of my head, the last logistical kind of area is there's a very extensive data request that sits around this from the FCA. So when you look at less the actual pricing intervention they're making and more the fair value question, they're asking boards to assess what fair value is, which we kind of do. We do today to a large degree anyway, but they're formalising that
they're not determining or stating what fair value is. That's for the board to get comfortable with. But they are surrounding that with a significant data request, ongoing data requirements to the FCA, presumably so that they can monitor exceptions and seek to understand how the market's operating and so on and so forth. Some of those data challenges will take time to build, literally, because they're quite big systems, engineering and data changes and so on. So there are just some practical implementation things. I don't know where timelines will end up. I don't want to preempt where the FCA, what people around the industry will ask for, and B, what the FCA will choose to do. I don't think anyone is talking about multiple years. I don't think it's a matter of pushing stuff out beyond planning horizons. I just think it's a matter of making sure that we can get everybody in the space where they're fully implemented and ready to go in a safe way and land it safely first time.
All right, understood. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Adam, any more questions?
Yes, we have another question. This question comes from Thomas Bateman of Berenberg. If you'd like to go ahead with your question, please, Thomas.
Hi, Thomas.
Hi, morning, Penny. Thanks for taking my question. I hope you're well and I wish Tim and his family well as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
A little bit more on the FCA review. I know the market would probably like a little bit more clarity, but I understand it's difficult for you to gauge the impact of the review now. But you talk about reviewing prices in recent years, particularly sort of in home insurance. Can you talk about, you know, what you've been doing there and maybe clarify what sort of rate? Second question on commercial lines, really promising growth. Do you still see this as an under-penetrated market, and how do you see profitability going into 2021? And one more question, if I may. Given the slightly more positive outlook, vaccine news, I know that there's a lot of risks out there with Brexit, the FCA consultation, COVID, but if those were to be navigated successfully, what would stop you reinstating the buyback at the full-year results?
Okay, all right. What have we been doing on home? I think if those who are there go back to the Capital Markets Day. The main thing we do on home, which we do actually across all of our products, although we started it on home first a number of years ago, so it's kind of more progressed in home, if you like, is we review at the five-year point everybody's, at the five-year, 10-year point, each policy holder's margin in percentage and pound terms. And if they're over a certain percentage or a certain pound value, then we adjust on renewal and bring them back within those bandings. And then over the years, what we have done is tighten those bandings. So all the time you're bringing the tail in, if you like. And you start off, in the early days just dealing with kind of the people in the very end of the tail, but progressively it's touching more and more customers. So, many hundreds of thousands of customers have had their prices sort of fixed or held or reduced as a result of that process. So I kind of, a lot of our work in the home space has been around making sure that overall we're comfortable that at that point that the value that people are getting is appropriate. And that's the way we think about that, and we've made considerable progress on that across the years. And that has been reflected in the home results as well. So that's kind of the stance we've taken, which is why I say and I think that's important less in the context of the, new business price equals renewal price type pricing intervention, but more in terms of the overall value part of the package that the FCA has put out there. So that's really where we are on home. Commercial, I'm glad you noticed it because we very rarely get a question on commercial, and I think they deserve some sunlight for their Q3 performance. I think what we've seen is kind of a proper bounce back, and we, I think, in Q2 had expected a really tough year for the commercial business because it's very SME-focused. We were expecting the economy to bite hard on the SMEs and so on, and I think certainly some of the government initiatives have smoothed that, but also I think we sometimes underestimate how entrepreneurial people do, do entrepreneurial things to keep, to keep moving. So that's been incredible to see. But it's also supported by some of the initiatives that have been in. So we've talked a little about kind of transformation programs, but in DL4B, we had a big drop on VAN in particular, on their new system, and supported by some new pricing tools, and that has given them the capability to price much more effectively in the marketplace or in a less constrained way than they were before from a systems perspective. So what they're really doing is bringing some of the learnings across from the personal lines books and methodologies into the commercial space. So I think that's done well, and I think NIG as well have for the last 3 or 4 years been pricing ahead of claims inflation. And we've continued, in the early years they were contained growth, but what we're seeing at the moment is they're doing that and growing as well, which is great to see. So in terms of profitability, I mean, the direct book is one of our, the DL4B book has loss ratios that are amongst the best in the organisation. So super happy with that. NIG has been improving and for many years was below our kind of return target, but it's certainly up or around there now, so we're getting there. So pretty happy with the profitability development there as well. So that's commercial. And then are we going to do a buyback? You won't be surprised for me to say it's a bit early at the moment to answer that question. I think what I would say is, as we come in, our first of the learnings of this year is our first and foremost focus is on getting our normal dividend, reliably and, safely paid out to our, to our investors. And that's why it was so important that we restored it and restored the catch up at Q2. The solvency position, you could see it at half year, and the world's not moved so dramatically is clearly strong at the moment. What that means in terms of buybacks and special dividends and so on is something the board will come to in the early part of next year. Not yet. Adam.
Thank you, Penny. It's really helpful.
Thanks. Adam, any more questions on the line?
Yes, we have another question. This question comes from Ivan Bakhmut of Barclays. If you'd like to go ahead with your question, please.
Hi, good morning, Penny. I have a question on the pricing approach within the light of the FCA reform. Some of the things you mentioned on the call today are quite encouraging. The improvement in current year loss ratio on an underlying basis, the planned reduction in expense ratio, and then, of course, one of the outcomes of the FCA reform, I suppose, over time would be a further improvement in retention ratios. So just from a competitive perspective, I was just wondering, why not grow a little faster now? Because you would appear to get that operational leverage in the future, more so, I guess, than in the past. And the second question I wanted to ask was just on the investment income throughout third quarter. There was no mention in the trading statement. Maybe you could just give us a brief update on that. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I think investment income, we kind of set some guidance at half year that from memory was about 1.8% is what I need, Tim, but it was about 1.8%, but I think we wouldn't materially change that now. So nothing particularly to call out in, on top of that. I think in terms of... I'm not sure it's wise for me to discuss trading strategy with you in that sense over this time period. All I will say is, it's a pretty competitive market already. So I'm sure it will continue to be competitive in the run-up to any FCA changes and so on and so forth. And it's another reason why it will be really good in that to be clear on the exact boundaries as we go through a transition to make sure that we, the market remains fully orderly. But thus far, it seems to be operating sensibly.
But just to follow up, in the aftermath of this FCA announcement, have there been any movements in the new business pricing? As you know, one of the wide expectations was that we'll have to some extent, rise to offset lower margins in the back book.
I think so. The reality, I think, at the moment is that the claims frequency effects out there in motor are dominating anything in that space. And home is a pretty competitive market and has been a pretty competitive and remains pretty competitive. So I don't think you can sit there and say it's obvious from October that, first week of November that there have been X, Y, and Z price moves as a result of the pricing practices. I think there are so many other dynamics out there at the moment that are more dominant, if you like, than that is at the moment. But it's an interesting question as to whether people choose to hold on to the current model basis till the point at which the rules become effective, or whether people try to evolve their pricing into the new environment. And I shouldn't, for competition reasons, start commenting on that, I think.
Thanks, Penny. I appreciate the caller.
Thanks. Adam, any other questions?
Yes, we have another question. This question this time comes from Faizan Lakhani of HSBC. If you'd like to go ahead with your question, please.
Morning, Penny. Morning, Nigel.
Morning.
Just had a few questions. On home insurance, home partnership, all the running off in part still makes up about a third of your household book. Now, although I expect that to shift over time, given the FCA review, does that have to accelerate? And can you just provide, at least qualitatively, what the margin differential between the own brand and partnership business is? That's question one. Question two, just coming back to the combined ratio. When I look at the half year, the motor combined ratio net of COVID was very, very strong. Now, I understand that there'll be some true-ups and seasonality, but your commentary suggests that, you know, although we can see an improvement year on year, it won't be to, you know, the same extent as we saw at the half year. Could you explain why we shouldn't be anticipating a greater improvement? And just on the third question as well, just can you just provide a bit of guidance in terms of how reinsurance renewal discussions are going, and what does that do for margins in 2021?
Okay, right. So why don't we do motor first? There's a few things in the shape that mean, because we were at about, 75 at, I think, loss ratio at half year. I think we were 81 or something like that at the end of last year. And we said we would want to improve on that 81. Now, there are a few things in the shape that I think mean the 75 doesn't project forward in itself, because you've got a couple of things. One is we entered the year with kind of strong premium growth, and that eased off, and average premiums reduced during Q2. So in the second half, you're seeing more of the reduced average premium flow through than you did in the first half, because it hadn't yet earned. Equally on reinsurance, we were at the better range, end of the range, that was, of outcomes in last year's reinsurance renewal, but nonetheless, in the first, it was an increase of, 5% or so. So in the first half of the year, you're only taking the strain of a bit of that. In the second half of the year, you've got all of that earning through, as well. And claims frequency is not the same shape in Q2 as it is in Q3 and Q4, albeit it's still depressed. So I think there are a number of factors in there that say that 75 is I don't know about seasonable, but is influenced by a number of effects that don't repeat in the same way in Q2. So, as I say,
sorry,
go on.
So you mentioned the average premium factor, but I'm assuming the average premiums come down because of the COVID benefit, and therefore net of any underlying frequency benefit, that shouldn't really have much of an impact. I mean, just trying to understand, and can you try and quantify what those tier three elements constitute of?
I'm not going to quantify the components on the call, but in essence, I'm saying that the average premium effects, you know, some will be COVID related, some won't, but the net upshot is average premium will be more depressed in the second half than it was in the first half, because in the first quarter it was kind of buoyant relative to the Q2 effects coming in. Reinsurance. You had the earn through of a lower reinsurance premium from the previous year in the first part of the year, some effects of that still earning through, whereas by the second half that's earned out. And then you've got the claims frequency shape. So you've got all of those components. I think it's difficult to peel apart component by component, this is COVID or this isn't, and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. I think when you bring it into the round, that's why we're saying don't expect to be at 75 again, because the earnings shapes don't support that, if you like.
And have you taken the full frequency benefit that you saw in the first half of the year, and will you look to take any of that in the second half?
So, you know, there are rules about how you take frequency benefits. So, you know, you account on the claims that you can see at the time, and you're only estimating the ones that haven't been reported yet. So. That's just the nature of accounting, which is why they there's more estimation not on claims numbers but on claim severity. That's where you're in reserving terms. That's where your estimation plays rather than in frequency. So I think that's motor. Then there's a question on home partnerships. I think you're right that the home partnerships are a significant part of the book. They are also covered by the FCA review. There are a number of questions in the clarification category around, around how some of those work. The book is a slightly different, you know, about how, in particular, closed books in the partnership space might work, although most of ours are not in that category, some are. I think in terms of the current book, interestingly, and in the NatWest part of that book in particular, something like, I forget, 40% maybe of the policies we've been writing are on a three-year basis, flat premium anyway. So there are different effects in that book. The margins in home in both parts of the book are decent, if you like, so there's not. I think the area where it's more different is price comparison because of the average premium point. So in margin terms, just to give you a sense.
As you move towards PCW business, should we expect margin pressure on the home books?
Well, I think we've said all the way along that the PCW is more competitive. We're still comfortable with the returns we get. If we get the strategy underway, you know, as we move through the strategy, and get cost-based rate, cost ratios improved and so on and so forth, then we are, our aim is to get those to equivalent. But actually, you know, as we come in, we know that the direct, margins are stronger than the price comparison margins. But we're not growing, but the price comparison margins are adequate, if you see what I mean, are appropriate. So we're happy writing price comparison business, otherwise we wouldn't be growing in it.
I'm guessing the FCA review accelerates the need to move
it. It's really driven by that average premium point. It's really driven by that average premium point because of smaller premiums.
Sure. I'm guessing the FCA review accelerates your need to move away from partnership into PCW and direct, though?
I don't see it as an accelerate away from at all. I think there's still huge potential in partnership business. So I don't see them as an either-or. I think is perhaps the way I would say. So for me, price comparison was always something that we'd underplayed and therefore was an opportunity rather than okay. Something we had to do because something else was dropping. That's the way I'd look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one was about reinsurance renewals. Too early to make clearly conversations have begun with the reinsurers, and it will be an interesting renewal round because obviously in some areas, COVID has had a huge impact on reinsurers, but equally, I suspect they will be quite comfortable with the margins they've made on motor this year. So, but it's early discussions, and it will, you know, it's a negotiation process as they always are. So, I don't have no view at the moment, I'm afraid.
Great, thank you very much.
So, I'm conscious of time. So, Paul, can you shout if you think we need to stop? But Adam, are there any more questions on the line?
Yes, we have a final question on the line. This final question comes from Ming Zhu of Panmure Gordon. If you'd like to go ahead with your question, please.
Oh, hi. Good morning, everyone. I try to keep it quick. Just two questions, please. First one is on the you gave an unchanged estimate on your BI and travel from COVID-19. Have you changed all the wordings in the policy, and are those policies will be running off by beginning of next year? And because I understand, I think you originally said you assumed lockdown until end of September. So I'm just wondering, you know, going forward.
Yeah.
And second question is, what have you seen in terms of change in customer behavior in motor insurance and since the lockdown? And do you expect some of that changes in customer behavior to stay for a longer period? Therefore, it might have an impact on your pricing going forward, pricing and reserving going forward. Thank you.
Let's do, I think just on the last one, I mean, clearly there are changes in customer behavior in motor as I sit here from my home talking to you. I think the comments that I made earlier about claims frequency are really people trying to, you know, the market will be trying to work out which of those are structural and which of those are not. Our sense from the bounce back in mileage through Q3 is that lots of those things are not sort of long-term structural, but clearly some will be, and that's something the market will evolve into over time, I think. In terms of BI and travel, just one comment on BI. I mean, we haven't changed our estimates, no reason to at this point, and we are no more really than interested observers from a distance in the test case now. So. I think the risks around those numbers reduced rather than increased. We've not at this point any made material changes to policy wordings in that space. And then in terms of travel, we said 25 million. I think what's happened over time is that the sort of funnel of uncertainty around that number is reduced. When we first put it up, you know, we had a wide range of sort of estimates, and we sort of picked a number we thought was sensible within them. I think as we've moved forward, that's got tighter. Yes, it was based on a number for September, but now where the market is, the travel levels are so low that actually the benefit of not getting normal claims versus COVID claims on the other side means that we're kind of more and more confident of 25. And actually the biggest risk in travel is really an airline going down, a major airline going down. And that, you know, depending on how that happens and what the sequence events are, that's probably the thing that is within those numbers, the sort of the biggest sort of level of uncertainty and estimation. But actually length of lockdown now I think is less of a factor, and perhaps the indicator is, whereas, you know, through most of this year, we've gone from what was pre-COVID a team of 220 people to a maximum of 750 to cope with the volume of customer questions and calls every time an average, you know, drops, or every time there's a travel announcement. When the new lockdown restrictions went into place, last week, there was no surge at all. So that probably tells you the levels of holiday bookings and things that are out there now are much, much diminished. So not worried about that. In terms of policy wordings, we have made changes to the own brand wordings, which are actually a very small proportion of the book, but those changes will mirror through on the package bank account wordings, which is the majority of the book, from the beginning of January. And essentially what they say is we will cover you if you have to cancel because you have COVID, and we will cover you if you have COVID abroad, What we won't cover you for is if you have to isolate because of track and trace. So you can't leave the house because of that. And really, what you're seeing the market move to is much more flexible booking now. And that's what we're encouraging customers is to book flexibly through those periods. So, and that gives us comfort that as travel starts to take off again under whatever form of vaccination process we have and so on and so forth, that we've got some air cover there, if you like.
Thank you.
So hopefully that answers the question. In which case, I'm conscious we've overrun, which given it was supposed to be a short call, it's probably time to draw a line. So thank you all for your time and for dialing in. And I'm sure Paul and I could take questions offline if we haven't dealt with everyone's questions. But look after yourself, everyone. Take care. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's call. Thank you for joining, and you may now disconnect your lines.